It's the fabulous, intelligent, always well-researched Punk News Podcast. Be sure to tune in every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern at punknews.org on the internet. With the Punk News Podcast, we bring you thrills, exciting conversation of the week's news, and cool new audio. The Punk News Podcast always features thoughtful, intelligent, dynamic discussion.
You're a dick, Ricky.
You're a dick, John.
No, Ricky, you're a dick.
No, John, you're a dick.
No, Ricky, you're the dick.
Guys, calm down.
Now, Adam, don't tell us to calm down. You're a dick.
You're a dick, Ricky.
No, Adam, you're a dick.
Thrill at the excitement of live performances from the luminaries of punk rock. Commentary on the new music of today.
Guys, I didn't listen to this week's song. I didn't listen to any of it.
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest. I don't know this band. I just got here, so I don't know what we're talking about really.
Did we have a plan for the show today? I didn't listen to this at all. In-depth interviews with the movers and shakers of today's punk rock.
So I'm excited about the music festival that you're curating. What band are you most excited to see?
The headliners are on the website.
Oh, yeah, I see. Tell me, what are some of your favorite musical performances from previous years?
We had many.
Right. What should attendees do when they're not checking out the bands at the festival?
And all recorded to the highest audio specification.
Guys, can you hear me? Skype is crapping out on me.
I can't hear anyone. Can anyone hear me?
Hello?
Hello?
Guys?
Hello?
Guys?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Can anyone hear me?
All this and more on the Punk News Podcast every Sunday at 4 at punknews.org.
Three, two, one. You are listening to Punk News Podcast 414. What you just heard was a commercial that we made like 3 years ago for a compilation that was kind of a clever idea. It was a compilation of bands and also of podcasts. And I was really proud of our commercial. I just came across this old file. I was proud of that commercial because all the other podcasts in the compilation were like, you're listening to Timmy and Jimmy, and this is the Two Funny Guys podcast, and we're going to talk about all your favorite things. So tune in to Timmy and Jimmy, you know what I mean? Or you know, whereas we were like, the Punk News podcast, it's terrible. We argue all the time. We've got tons of technical difficulties. It sounds like shit. Don't listen. So Adam, like, do you remember recording our commercial? And honestly, I think our commercial came out the best out of anybody's, just because we were the only ones that were like pure nihilism, you know what I mean?
I don't remember this, but that seems very much like a sentiment I would have expressed.
Oh, you don't remember recording that? Ricky, do you remember recording
that? I remember vaguely the project. I don't remember doing it per se. I don't doubt that we did.
I do remember recording it, but and then maybe like a year later, I was wondering like what happened to it, and then I totally forgot about it, and then John reminded me about it.
Where's my fucking check? I recorded that commercial. Come on.
Yeah, I don't even. What was the comp even for?
I mean, it wasn't a bad idea in concept. It was basically, we're going to make a compilation with music and podcasts. But I mean, as far as actual listening goes, like, who wants to listen to like 4 minutes of a podcast between each song? You know what I mean?
Right.
But then we'll go record a mixtape that's full of fucking skits. That's basically that. Is this still the intro?
Well, I disagree, Adam, because our mixtapes, much like hip-hop mixtapes, have intros and outros and a few interludes, but the interludes are only like 15, 20, 10 seconds, much like a hip-hop mixtape. So you got the big intro and the big outro, but the flow, I take it as a direct insult, Adam, because I think the flow of our mixtapes are superb and honestly among the best compilations there are. Most punk rock compilations don't focus on flow, unlike hip-hop tapes, which do. And I'm very proud that our compilations do focus on flow and kind of clip along and snap along, if you ask me. They're an hour aside, but they feel like they're about 17 minutes aside, if you ask me.
Is this still the intro? Like the pre-song intro?
No, Adam. Instead of doing our normal intro, I played our commercial and I went
right into the podcast. Oh, I thought you were going to like play the commercial and then intro, and I'm like, keep trying to give you a jumping off point here, which is what where's my fucking check was supposed to be. But I'm like, John keeps talking. He's trying to converse.
Well,
anyways.
Excuse us for being frazzled. We've got a big show. Not that much happened this week, and then all of a sudden a ton of things happened. So this is Features Editor John Gentile. I'm here with Contributing Editor Adam White. Adam White, are you excited for tonight's show? Big show tonight.
I'm all discombobulated now. I don't know where I am.
And we are also here with News Editor, Reviews Writer, Interviewer, Tricky Ricky. Tricky Ricky, on a scale of 1 to 69, how discombobulated are you?
17.
That's not that discombobulated. I mean, every day I'm at least at like a 50. You know what I mean? Like I wake up, I'm already at like 52 discombobulation.
No. I sounded more chronic. Well, actually, depressed like, than discombobulated though.
The last
whatever.
The last 2 days though of news has risen my discombobulation rating quite a bit. There's been a lot of stuff suddenly just pouring in, and it's been a little difficult to keep up. Yeah.
Well, listen, speaking of discombobulation, Adam White and I both assigned the members of the podcast two tracks that are discombobulated and kind of unusual and at least kind of weird. I instructed Adam White and Tricky Ricky to listen to a track by Gizem. I've recently, I guess, become reinterested in Gizem because Integrity covered them. I've been aware of Gizem for a while, but I'm never a huge fan, so I finally tracked down a copy of their first album, Detestation. In case you don't know, Gizem is one of the original, but not the original, but one of the original Japanese Burning Spear hardcore bands. There's Gizem, Zao, Galze, Lip Cream, and a couple of other bands that are kind of considered the first wave of Japanese hardcore and even Japanese punk. A lot of musicians that I respect love Gizem. I get some of them. I think Damien Abraham even says Gizem is his favorite band, but he says a lot of bands are his favorite bands. But still, he likes Gizem. Dwed Hellion of Integrity loves Gizem. And so often I'll say, well, if a band that I like likes a band, there's probably something to them, and that usually works out. For me, the only time it has, well, a couple of times, like, I just cannot get into Kiss. Bands I love, love Kiss, and I just cannot
Kiss rules.
Well, fair enough, but I just cannot get into Kiss. Anyways, so I've been checking out Gizem, and honestly, I'm on the fence with Gizem, and we're going to play one of their tracks in a couple of minutes. What's interesting about Gizem, I guess, is it's completely like kind of off the wall. Like it's based in like heavy, it's based in like hardcore kind of Discharge kind of style hardcore. But the singer is a guy called Sakibi or something like that. It's Japanese. I can't pronounce it. And like he sings like really weird, and that like he'll start like he'll like change his accent like halfway through like a line. Like it sounds like he's trying to parody like maybe an American surfer accent, and then kind of like a wimpy guy or a nerdy guy, and then kind of more like a DB, you know, growl kind of thing, and he like switches halfway through. But there's all these like weird voices that crop up like in the track, and the lyrics themselves kind of don't make, they're written in English, but they kind of don't make sense. Like the track we're going to play is called Endless Blockade for the Pussy Footer, which doesn't even really make that much sense. But that being and the deep punks, that they say, oh, Gizem, that's the best, you know, Japanese hardcore, that's the best of the best. And I've often wondered, is this Emperor's New Clothes, that maybe it's really not that good? And I mean, it's the lyrics are pretty cliche, and if you look at the guys, it's kind of like a cross between Crass and Motley Crue. So the question is, do they not, quote, get it, or do they get it and they're purposely subverting it, or they don't care about what the punk rules are and they're doing what they want to do? But then also, maybe it's not fair to say Japanese hardcore is like this. Maybe just Sakivis are really weird. Like, you wouldn't say that, you know, British punk is all like rudimentary P-Line or Nick Blinko. You say Nick Blinko is whacked out. Not all British punk is whacked out, you know. And I love rudimentary P-Line. So maybe just Sakivis a whacked out guy, and that's why people love Gizem, because it is so weird. Listening to this, I'm on the fence with this track is, you know, the lyrics are kind of cliche. The music is cool. But it's not groundbreaking, except for it is kind of groundbreaking in that it's like glam metal mixed with DB, which is really weird. But I guess what is attracting me to this and what's keeping me hooked and keeping me on the fence is it is so weird. Like, there's all these like weird voices. Like, at one point somebody burps, at another point a guy kind of starts talking like Mickey Mouse. And I'm not sure if it's supposed to be funny or if it's not supposed to be funny, and I just don't understand the culture that it's coming from. Adam White, what do you think of Geezum? What's your stance on Emperor's New Clothes, Long Lost Genius Track, or in between?
I enjoyed this from a, I think, like, musically in the background, it's really cool. It has that sense of sort of like John Gentile strange whimsy that we talk about so much, and I get why you'd like it from that standpoint. It unfortunately, like, it really shows its age of when it was recorded, because it, at least in my opinion, is not a sound engineer or anything like that. It seems like the mix is way out of whack, at least the one that you've got on YouTube. Like, the vocals are super high, the instrumentation is all, you know, buried way below that. It almost sounds like they're like they're disjointed.
Yeah.
In a way, but not in a way that I think is was necessarily like artistically on purpose or anything like that. I think that's just, you know, they recorded it on a budget and that's what they got. So you got to kind of look through some of that, at least on this track. But I don't know. I'm cool with this. I haven't. My circles don't seem to be talking all that much about Geezum, so I'm not sure if there's some sort of popular reevaluation of them that I should be reacting to or not.
In Philadelphia right now, there's a new band called Devil Master, which is kind of like influenced by a lot of these bands. So at least in Philadelphia, like, there's been a reinvigoration. Basically, people are talking and are getting into these bands once again. It happens every 10 years or so. Like, people are like, oh, Japanese hardcore, that's the stuff, you know? And so that's happening right now in Philadelphia, and I happen to catch the wave this time. Adam, do you think it's supposed to be funny? Do you think the weirdness is on purpose, or is the weirdness due to ineptitude, or just a weird, crazy guy, kind of like Dick Blanco, and this is what he is? Or is that the appeal? Nobody knows.
I mean, not being able to speak to the cultural aspect of it, it reads as weird on purpose. But there could totally be some, you know, something where they're looking at it and saying, like, you know, not only do you have the, you know, not only is it just like a bunch of strange accents and bizarre, you know, vocal effects that are being taken on, but also there's some sort of commentary on, you know, reflecting American music or American culture. Like, I don't know if that's a part of it, and that's what I can't get a read for there. Like, maybe this is
more British than American. Wouldn't you say it's more British, like crass?
Well, I'm sorry, like Western, right? Like the Mickey Mouse voice and things like that, right? Like, is that an aspect of it, or is that something we're reading into it because I expect that to be an aspect of it? I mean, I don't know. So it certainly, at least from my filter, is sort of delightfully strange, but
I've asked some Japanese people, and I haven't gotten a straight answer yet.
It's probably very hard to
get
that, especially on something that falls within the realm of, like, weird hardcore music, which, like, even in its normal language is going to be weird for probably all sorts of different cultural reasons that you're not picking up on. So I don't know if you'll be able to unpack it. You may just have to ride the lightning, John.
I was thinking that same thing. Like, you know, in Japanese, they'll be like a single word for, like, being sad because it's a Wednesday and your parents haven't spoken to you in a while. Like, you know how Japanese has, like, all these extremely specific words and feelings and emotions? Maybe it's something like that, and that you can't, you know, translate it. Like, you literally can't translate it to English, you know?
That's even news to me. Doesn't German have words like that? I feel like every once in a while someone brings up a German expression that completely, not an expression, like a German word, a single word that completely encapsulates some indescribable thing that, like, everyone around the world has to experience. Or it's something like, you know, like being sad because you paid too much for a sandwich, but you've got it because that's what you have for lunch and it wasn't actually that good, but it was all hyped up for you. Like, that whole feeling is a single word in German.
The classic is Schadenfreude, deriving pleasure from the misery of others, you know?
Yeah, all these things we all do, but we don't have words for them, but the Germans do.
Ricky,
Germans can't go wrong, John.
They can't. Ricky, Geezum, what's your stance?
It was fine. I mean, I it's not something I would go... I'm not really into, like, this... This seemed like a lot of, like, anarcho with, like you said, crass and a lot of just a whole bunch of stuff in there. It wouldn't be something I, like, seek out, but I thought it was cool. It's kind of a weird little relic from... This is from the 80s, right?
Right, early 80s.
Yeah, I think this is kind of a cool. I mean, it's kind of a cool experimental hardcore thing from the 80s. It's a nice little time capsule of what was trying to be done in Japan, which we don't hear a lot of, actually.
I think part of that is I was at Spin Records in Philadelphia a little while ago, and as they explained to me, I don't know this myself, but as they explained to me, like, the Japanese bands aren't necessarily even interested in exporting their music to other places, you know, like, and actually we got a really cool letter from a guy that we're going to read. Like, some countries, like Brazil, like, you know, every world, check out our music, world, check out, this is cool, check out what we do in Brazil, come to Brazil, check it out. What I've been told, and I can't speak for this from my own knowledge, and that in Japan, they're not necessarily interested in doing that, you know. Anyway, speaking of weirdness, Adam, what, you also assigned Ricky and I a track by an interesting young fellow.
Yeah, I realized that, like, it was not, like, the best thing to do to make you go watch this 3 minutes before the show and then be like, you know, what do you think of that? Because I guess there's some loadedness that's into this. But I was at the what's today? Say Tuesday?
Wednesday.
I don't know what day it is. So Monday night, I was at the Polaris Music Prize Gala in Toronto, which is the first year I've actually gone to it. I am not a person that goes to a lot of galas, John.
What'd you wear, Adam?
Well, this is the thing. So it's like, it's a gala and it's an award ceremony. So I kind
of
like,
do you wear your Punk News tuxedo with the big P on the back of the top hat?
Well, I didn't know what to do. So I actually went on to Twitter the other day and I kind of joked like, ha ha ha, what do I wear to this thing? And the Polaris like responds to me and their answer was like pants. And I was like, oh, fuck off. Like, that doesn't help me at all. So I'm Googling like Polaris Music Prize dress code. Nothing. I'm like looking at Flickr pictures of past galas to see if I can like get a shot of like someone's, you know, selfies with their friends in the crowd, so I can be like, what the fuck are you people wearing? Because they didn't want to be a total clown coming into this, right? I'm all for being a, you know, Mr. Punk Rock, but I don't want to look like a complete fucking dirt bag in a room full of black tie people. That is not my intent. So I wasn't quite sure. And my original plan was actually to go in there and wear like a B.A. Johnson t-shirt with a suit jacket over it. And also because like the whole B.A. Johnson thing is semi-loaded in the Polaris world because he's always in the mix when the long list of that is being voted for. And there's always like a big like shortlist B.A. hashtag campaign that I'm sure is slightly annoying to the people that actually treat it very seriously. So I thought about that. But then even that, I was about to get in the car and drive up to Toronto. And I was like, if I walk into this room and everyone's in fucking black tie and I have a t-shirt on under a sports coat, I'm still going to feel like an asshole. And not a funny asshole. I'm just going to feel like an asshole. So I came up with something. I came up with what I thought was appropriate. I'm going to a music event, but a fancier music event than one that I've ever been to get up. And I think it worked when I got into the room. The backstage of this thing, as like a gala, as an event, it was super neat to have, like, just to see the mix of people wandering around there, because the prize is pulling in people from like all swaths of culture up in Canada. So you had all kinds of different, like, just even different like ethnic groups that were in the room, you know, dressed up and representing themselves. So you of course had like a lot of middle-aged white dudes that were there because they worked in the industry or they worked for like Factor or Music Canada or SoCan or any of the music apparatus up here. But then like you had at least two acts that were playing that were like righteously angrily, you know, indigenous. You had groups that were up there that were, you know, let's say like righteously queer. You had groups up there that were from like Congolese Canadians. So there were all these like people in just crazily like amazing outfits from like the Congolese crew that were there. You know, you had people from the French areas and everything else. And just like, it was just cool. I'm just wandering around this room, drinking an incredibly expensive beer and just people watching. And I'm like, this is neat. I've never been in a room like this full of people. Anyways, though, so this was the Polaris Music Prize thing. So what happens was we had narrowed down the short list to 10, and I'm on the jury that did that. And then of the 10, there's a grand jury that I was not a part of like 10 or 11 people that basically go into the back room during this award ceremony and fight out who wins. And during all of that, whichever of the performers they were able to actually get to come to the performance will like put on a performance. So this was pretty good. We had like 8 out of the 10 acts played a show there. And sometimes bands just can't because it like conflicts with their touring or everything like that. Like Pup was on the short list a year ago, but when the time of the gala happened, they were touring Australia or something like that. So they just like sent their parents to the thing. So there was this like table full of like Pup's parents at last year's gala. But anyways, the performances and everything were all really good and like really cool. Everyone always tries to do something above and beyond, or bands that will say have a pretty standard stage show when they're on that platform, because it's sort of simulcast all over the country. It's a big cultural event up here. They'll always try to, like, you know, if they normally don't have like a team of dancers and six cellos, they're going to play their thing with a team of dancers and six cellos kind of thing. So, and the funny thing is, like, the one band that normally plays with that, they did the whole thing with just like an a cappella choir behind them, like completely flipped what you'd expect of them to do. But the one that I really, really wanted to see, because I was super into the record and I was super into just like the stories of this dude's performances, was this kid from Quebec named Hubert Lemoine. Now, he's like 24. He had a record that came out I guess it would have been last year because it was nominated on a Simone Records at a Quebec called Darlene. He wrote the whole thing in like an artist's co-op there. He's this young kid. He projects himself in this completely like sassy, androgynous manner. Like, he's always like, he's completely made up when he's playing. His performances he's never performed outside of Quebec for that matter. Like, this is his first show like in English Canada, let alone anywhere outside of Quebec. But the shows that we've heard about in Quebec, and we don't get like a lot of cross-cultural talk from things that happen in French Canada. Like, there's just this linguistic wall where, like, there'll be bands that play in Quebec that are enormous within Quebec, but no one has ever heard of them or gives a shit in the rest of Canada. And there's whole genres of music that will exist and thrive in Quebec that we don't interact with or hear about or anything like that.
How many people are in French Quebec?
I've got to imagine that Quebec has, let's see, Quebec probably has a population not too dissimilar to Ontario. Quebec is 8 million people.
Oh, okay. So, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Let me see how many are in Jamaica.
Yeah. So it's 8 million people, but it is very much a culture that feels attacked a lot of the times because, it has the same complex that, you know, Canadians have about Americans. We're worried that, like, if
Jamaica's only 3 million. Wow.
Yeah. So we're always worried in Canada that, like, if we let down our cultural guard, like, American culture is just going to subsume us and then we're not going to have any more culture.
Good.
Because there's just like such a gigantic amount of money in the States that goes into producing like movies and music and stuff like that. So if we don't have some sort of firewall to protect the creation of Canadian stuff like that, we would just watch American stuff all day, right? That's actually factors into the NAFTA talks that are happening right now. It's like, we have those protections built into our laws.
That's why you don't get leftover crack in your country, Adam. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because if we let Stizza up here, he's going to totally take over. if Stizza comes up, we're going to be like, Brian Adams, why do we got this asshole? We got Stizza, and then it's all over. But Quebec has that to a huge degree, but also to the degree where there's actual history that's attached there, where, like, yeah, the English sort of tried to destroy you on several occasions. So they sort of have their backs up in the first place about interacting with English Canada. So there's a lot that goes on inside of Quebec culturally that we just never really catch wind of. But Lemoire's, just on his performances, is one of these things that have started to creep into the rest of English Canada, or at least in the arts world, and people have started to notice him. So he comes out on stage, and he's got this reputation of being unpredictable and weird and doing outrageous stuff. He comes out on stage, he's wearing like a smock with like a big crass patch on the back of it. And then when I actually got home and got looked it up on YouTube and started zooming in on it, it's got like Misfits patches and stuff like this. Like, he walks out in this like this weird like punk rock blouse that he's made for himself.
I'd call it a smock. I'd say it's a smock.
Smock, yeah. So he plays the first three songs off of Darlene, which is a record that it is a combination of like some very like inside Quebec influences, but also there's a lot of like glam revival that's in there. He's been compared to like Ziggy Stardust era Bowie with a lot of the stuff that he does. He gets Mark from T-Rex, he's gets compared to a lot. He has this reputation of being just one of these like, I'm gonna stick my thumb on my nose and yell fuck you at the man kind of characters. And as he's playing, actually, and then you saw, you might have, I don't know if you noticed this in the video or not, they had a big fleur-de-lis behind him on the screen, but the fleur-de-lis was basically made out to be a penis, and there was like, you know, jizz lines coming out the top of the fleur-de-lis symbol. So he has that kind of thing where like he's going to take all of these sacred aspects of your culture and, you know, take the piss of them. So he goes and he plays this show and he's doing the thing where the band is playing pretty faithfully as to what's on the record, but he's kind of running around like a nut throughout the whole thing. Eventually he gets down into the crowd. He starts taking beer off people's tables. He was smashing wine glasses while he was down there. He ends his set by climbing back up onto the stage, yelling something like, fuck gender, fuck the rules, fuck your American dream, I am your French Canadian nightmare, and proceeds to basically walk back into the crowd on top of people's tables, and this was cut out of the video, walks right back to the table where he was sitting and sits down.
They should have let that in. That's hilarious.
Yeah, he sits down at the table and just like keeps drinking. Meanwhile, his band was still on stage. They all kind of like shrugged and wandered off stage, but then his guitarist had an effects pedal that was like looping some noise at the end. And then like she ran back out on stage, I think when they cut to the commercial break, and had to like turn it off because it kept going. But I remember just like watching that thing, and like the crass smock aside, I'm just thinking to myself during it, I'm like, oh my God, this is the first thing that I've seen in such a long time that feels like actually subversive, where like I've seen, you know, how many fucking bands have I seen in the past year where it's, you know, four dudes, they get up on stage and they play loud rock music and it's like, all right. And, you know, and you walk away and you go like, that was some fine punk rock that I just saw. But, you know, no one's clutching their pearls about what that's going to do to the children. Right. Like it's such a known quantity that when you hear people talk about it and they go, oh, people used to be really offended that there was this, you know, loud, fast music about fuck the man out there, and you read that in a book and you're like, oh, okay, like, sure, I guess so. Or you see like a clip of someone talking about the Sex Pistols or early punk rock and all those early news clips about how it was going to like wreck the children, and you look at all that and you'd go, okay, like that seems like something out of a weird sci-fi, you know, movie, or, you know, like
The Giver.
Yeah, like I understand that happened, but it seems so removed. But then I'll see someone like him where like, so like he's super young, so he's just like at the cusp of like getting out there and having any kind of music career. But he goes out there with this like complete, like not only a complete fuck you, but like a complete like androgynous fuck you, like I'm gonna rattle your cages, you know, however I can, and it's going to be sort of by a combination of like playing this fun glam music, but also being like, you know, really gay about it, but maybe I'm not being really gay about it, but I'm also going to take all of your sacred cultural symbols, Quebec, and I'm going to turn them into penises, and what do you think about that? But at the same point, you know, fuck you, English Canada, and by extension, America. And I'm just watching it, and I'm just like, man, I'm losing words right now because that was how I felt. I'm just even in the crowd, like, so I was in the balcony that was watching this, if you saw in the video, and I'm just, it felt so much like louder there too, even compared to the TV cast of it. And I'm just like, I'm just sitting back in my chair afterwards and just being like, shit, like I would have hated to have been a more conventional band that kind of had to get on stage and like, you know, here's our 4/4 rock song, right? And then you go through it and you're like, okay, it's just like, yeah, I don't know, I don't get that confrontational, snotty
aspect out of my punk bands right now. And so, and I'm not going to like chase the dragon, John. I'm going to find someone that's playing like, you know, electronica jazz fusion somewhere, some music I don't even like, but they're going to have that attitude. And I think that's what I want.
Well, I will say this guy is great. I mean, this live video. I did appreciate the "Fuck Your American Dreams," but I'll give him a pass. He's a young guy, you know. But artistically, I think this is stellar. And actually, this is true, Adam. I'm probably going to buy this CD just based off that video. I would say he looks a lot like Robert Smith. He's got kind of the Robert Smith thing going. I was reminded, honestly, this felt a lot like David Bowie's last album, Black Star, in that it's glam rock, but it's got kind of like the jazz stuff going. I agree that it is confrontational and aggressive and weird, and I truly did dig this. One thing with regard to this kind of music, and also with Gizem and that kind of thing, is when you get into further, I mean, Adam, not to insult you, this was cool. This was not like super far out. Like this, I felt as I was not, what's the word, like I'm not, I understood where the music was. You understand what I'm saying? Like, it sounded like music to me, you know?
And that's actually the other thing is, like, I really like the record that this came out on, but I was into the record before I had seen performance videos or seen or really known much about the dude's backstory. Now, the dude's backstory sort of, like, took it over the top, where I was just like, whoa, like, I like the fact that, like, not only is there this record that I think is a very nice kind of, like, nouveau glam record, but... you know, there's this crazy aspect to it that makes it way more interesting to me. But before that, the record divorced from that, just sort of, you know, it's a good, you know, pop rock record there's nothing hard about the record. Like the live performance seemed like much more aggressive than that, right? And I don't know where exactly that line is between, like, you know, can the music be tame but the performance performance and the persona be whacked out, and is that enough, or does it kind of have to be both? And I don't even know if you necessarily need to choose. Like, I went out to a bar in like the fucking middle of the night the other week to see this act from Hamilton called Man-Made Hill. Now, Man-Made Hill is, it's like, it's a solo guy playing like aggressively strange electronic music off of a couple synths that he has on stage as he's covered in green face paint and yelping and shouting and being totally fucking bizarre. And all of his songs are about, like, if I try to explain what any of the songs are about here, it is going to make no sense. There's a song, I may have played one on the podcast before. I played something on the podcast before called Allergic to Spikes by him, right? Where it's just like the weirdest stream of consciousness bullshit that he's singing, right? And I'll go see him and I'll be like, okay, this dude is sort of the opposite, where his whole shtick is that he sounds aggressive and bizarre on record. In person, he's aggressive and bizarre. But on the other hand, there were, you know, 14 of us in a bar at 11 at night watching him play, as opposed to, say, someone like Lemoir that is, you know, aggressive and strange in person, on record, fairly, you know, conventional from a musical sense, but, you know, he was broadcast to, available in every home in the country with that thing, right? So, you know, you pick one or the other, I guess. I don't know if there's a better answer.
Well, fair enough. This guy's cool. I think everyone should check him out. We're going to save mail till next week. You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We love getting your mail. We're going to play some Gizem, and then maybe Adam will play. Maybe. Are you going to play some You Wear It later on? Or?
I don't know. Maybe. I will.
We'll see. Anyway, this is Gizem doing Endless Blockades for the Pussyfooter, and you can decide where you stand on Gizem. Yeah!
Oh my god,
it is buggy!
For the pussy footah. Let's hit some news. We've got a lot to cover. The Misfits, they've announced a new show. They're playing Chicago again following in their Riot Fest show from, I guess, about a year ago now or a year and a half ago now. Of course, it's the reunited Misfits with Glenn Danzig, Jerry Only, probably Doyle, although Doyle hasn't been announced, but he likes playing that game. And, of course, Dave Lombardo on drums and AC Slade on backup guitar. Opening bands are Fear, Venom, and Power Trip. This does lead credence. A little while ago, a quote contract leaked that said the Misfits agreed to doing 10 shows. I'm very suspicious that that contract is genuine because it wasn't written like a lawyer would write a contract. It really wasn't. But it could have been drafted in a settlement agreement at a settlement conference, or mediation, which maybe it was. But I'm skeptical of that. Contract, but the reason I bring it up is that contract said Misfits agree to do 10 shows. The Chicago show leads credence to that because we're getting this like Misfits show number 6 or 7, and they're spacing the shows out to every 5 or 6 months, I would say, for maximum dollar. That is to make it an event and not just the Misfits are on tour, you can go see them. Here's the question. When Misfits first reunited, everyone was like, oh my god, the Misfits are back together. You know, I can't believe it. Now that the Misfits have played about 5 or 6 shows and, you know, everyone knows what they're going to get, is the Misfits show less special and now they're kind of just like a festival band, even though this isn't a festival? Are they just another big band that plays once in a while? And has the thrill gone away? The thrill is gone. Is the thrill gone?
You know, I'm starting to think the thrill is starting to die because I was talking with a friend of mine and we were talking about how we both missed the Misfits LA show back in December. And at the time, I was kind of pissed I wasn't able to go because they were $400 tickets. But but then we were like, yeah, well, you know what? I don't feel that bad anymore. So it kind of wore off. I think for me, it's worn off a little bit. If I could go, I would go, but I don't think I would be as stoked as I was maybe a year ago. I'm curious to know, to see if they decide to expand this to like Canada and Europe. And hopefully, but we probably won't get it. I would also not be opposed to a live album from one of these shows too.
I'm not sure if my opinion on this has altogether changed too much. Like, the tickets are enormously expensive, and everyone has those like those attention grabbing screenshots that everyone's taking of the of the prices. There was one that Scott posted, Scott Heisel posted the other day, where the screenshot that he took out of Ticketmaster or whatever actually said next to each of them like Riot Fest discount. So he had like run a discount code into it, but they were still multiple hundreds of dollars per ticket. So yeah, that's attention grabbing. I still feel, this is weird, but like I feel good for them. Like, I mean, I'm cool with those guys getting paid. That doesn't bother me at all. And if they can sell tickets to these shows, it is such a difference in perception from like Misfits as a joke, which is what we all grew up with. Basically, was like Misfits as a joke, like and. So for them to somehow resurrect from that and to become like the hottest ticket in town, I don't know, it kind of makes me feel good. I mean, I don't know if I'd drop that much money on it. I would probably not, but I don't know. I'm still cool with this. Like it doesn't seem like it's like gotten old to me. Like if they can, you know, if they can ride it out and make the money and like get the respect they deserve. It's a weird thing to say but you know, I'm okay. I'm not buying one, but I'm cool. I'm happy for all of you.
Well, speaking of people that are not happy, here's some heavy stuff that's gone down in Germany. Of course, during the World Cup, four members of Pussy Riot stormed the pitch. At least three of them got jail time for about 10 days, and then when they were released, they immediately got arrested again and got another 10 to 15 days. Then after that, there was a day of, quote, widespread protest in Moscow. One of the guys that stormed the pitch and was also arrested at the day of widespread protest was a guy called Peter Verzilov. He's in Pussy Riot. And actually, he was married to Nadia of Pussy Riot. Now he's married to a different member of Pussy Riot, I believe. Nadia was like one of the three girls that three women when they first got international attention. So anyways, he got arrested, and he went to either a hearing or a trial. It's unclear. Maybe in Russia it's the same thing. I don't know. And then immediately afterwards, he became very, very ill. He lost his hearing. He lost his sight. He couldn't. He lost his memory, and eventually he lost consciousness and was in very critical medical condition. So basically, the Russian doctors took him, and Pussy Riot claims the Russian doctors would not tell them what was wrong with him. They wouldn't give him any information. Eventually, Pussy Riot says the Russian doctors said he was either poisoned or overdosed by anti-cholinergic drugs. I don't even know what that is, but I don't think anybody's taking those kind of drugs. His family said he wouldn't take those kind of drugs. Pussy Riot was more explicit. They said he was poisoned at the hearing as revenge for making this international message during the World Cup protest. So eventually he regained consciousness after 3 days, but he was still very, very ill. He got shipped off to Berlin, who had better medical facilities than Moscow, and the Berlin doctors confirmed he did not overdose on a drug. He was poisoned by a drug. And so, I mean, not that we should get too hung up, but there was a couple of trolls that were like hell bent on defending Russia, and they were like, correlation is not equal causation. And I'm like, listen, if you get arrested by a country that is notorious for doing these kinds of things, and you get deathly ill immediately after a hearing, and you haven't gotten ill like that before, and then it becomes clear that you were poisoned, I think it's pretty clear what's going on. I've got a lot of thoughts on this, and one thing to point out, but I don't know if either of you two have a comment on, I guess, Pussy Riot. Are they going to change in Russia by bringing, you know, a world's eye view to this thing? Or is it scary that even some Americans are saying stuff like, well, you know, Russia wouldn't do that, or, you know, you can't blame Russia. Pussy Riot's bad, not Russia. When if you ask me, it's clear that Russia is not nice people. Adam White loves Russia.
Wasn't there some other poisoning in the UK not long ago?
There was a huge story up there because it was a former Russian intelligence officer like and his daughter. They were like sitting on a park bench and
it was like some like not nuclear, but it was something in that realm.
It was one of these things that's not just gonna like blow off a truck. It's pretty clearly manufactured and weaponized for these purposes. I find the Pussy Riot thing just fascinating in that, like, how ballsy it is. Like, I just based on what we hear about Russia, and what happens to, you know, opposition leaders in Russia, let alone protesters on the streets. You know, I'm surprised that any of them, you know, is still. Has their freedom at this point.
Yeah,
It's like it's an incredibly brave thing that they're doing to the point where I'm like, wow, like you guys have done a lot here. Maybe you can, you know, not die now. But there's an interesting angle on this that I've waiting to hear become more of a story around these parts is that the gentleman who was allegedly poisoned here was a dual Canadian citizen.
Oh, so I didn't see that in the news at all, Adam.
Yeah, so it potentially opens up those questions about like, well, you know, if you're a citizen of that country, your country has some responsibility when you get into trouble abroad to, you know, to step in and say something or do something about it. But the bounds of that always get tested when, you know, it's someone that's a dual citizen or someone that, you know, people are going to popularly assume like aren't a true Canadian or American, which is usually just code for a bunch of racism that's involved. Right. Because like we had that problem happen with, what was his name? There was a guy that was in Gitmo. Let me make sure I have his name right.
Well, while Adam.
Yeah, no, hold on. I got it. So there was. Oh, wait, shit, that's not...
But while Adam's looking it up, I will point out that as staffer Sean points out, we're not saying the Russian people are bad, we're saying the Russian government is scary, just to clarify, as staffer Sean was intent on highlighting.
Yeah, okay, no, so, this issue came up, like, really recently here, so there was a guy named Omar Cotter, who was a... He was a Canadian citizen of... I don't know what... what his family where they emigrated from, but it doesn't matter. He was a Canadian citizen legally. His father was like known to be, you know, involved with Al Qaeda and all this terrorist stuff. He was brought over to Afghanistan to put into one of those like Al Qaeda training camps, right? And during the Afghan war, like it was alleged that he was like brought in as a POW for like as a 15-year-old for like tossing a grenade and killing an American medic or something like that, right? Well, then so he was brought down to Gitmo, and you had that whole like that whole confrontation all of a sudden came up in Canada where they're like, well, you know, this kid's not really Canadian. Like, why do we have to go down to Gitmo and like try to advocate for him to come back? And you had this like this very racist element of it that was looking at it and being like, oh, you know, like you know, that is he's one of them, right? He's one of the enemy. He's over there fighting our allies, the Americans, and potentially killing, you know, one of our allies and the Americans. And his family immigrated from one of these countries that we're at war with. So, you know, fuck that guy. Leave him there to rot. But at the same point, like, you know, he was born in Toronto in 1986. Like, he's not that. That means he is like a legitimately fully legal Canadian. So if your citizenship means anything, the government has to, you know, advocate for your, at least, not for your like innocence, but at least for your like, you know, rendition back to Canada so that you can like serve in a Canadian prison or whatever like that. Right. So you get into those kind of issues. So I wonder if like, we're going to get the same sort of thing here, not where people are going to necessarily be racist against the Russians, but where they're going to look at it and be like, you know, like it is really not politically expedient right now for us to start a diplomatic, you know, issue with the Russians, given how content the Russians seem about monkeying in everyone else's business at the moment. Like, maybe we don't need to be having a giant fight with them in public, but you know, if this dude is legitimately a Canadian citizen, are we not sort of obliged to be, you know, over there advocating for him? So it is interesting. I'm waiting for it to blow up. It hasn't blown up.
I hope nothing blows up, let me tell you. I'm anti-violence, Adam.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Ricky, solve international relations, please.
Yes.
No.
Yeah, I don't know where we go with this.
I'll tell you where we go with this.
I'm never sure we go with the Pussy Riot stuff because it always feels like we have to like punch way above our pay grade on this. It's like,
yeah, it seems like
Pussy Riot put out a new split EP with Swingin' Utters. Like, it's not that.
It seems like this is gonna be a very long saga. I mean,
I think this kind of stuff kind of just disappeared. You know what I mean? Like. And you can't really blame Pussy Riot necessarily for not pushing this, because if they push it, I mean, I guarantee the Russian boys, you know, got heavier duty equipment than Pussy Riot does, you know. One thing, and we brought this up last time we had a Pussy Riot issue, and I want to mention it again because we really didn't get any kind of sense on this, is, Adam, listen, it's clear that the Russian boys are up to some wacky stuff. They're up to some hijinks, you know. Doesn't this serve as a symbol or as a example that it's clear that Russia is up to hinky stuff, so we would want to investigate our own government to make sure that they're not up to hinky stuff in our own government? Isn't that what this says?
I look forward one day to reading the book that like explains the layers of messaging that is involved in all this stuff. Like,
I mean,
like
that means, Adam.
You look at the case in the UK, right, that Ricky was alluding to. So you have this person that was involved in the spy world and all this subterfuge and all this, like, you know, subterfuge and stuff like that, who is poisoned by like some fucking nuclear related poison, right? That only the Russians have, right? So they're not stupid. They know that if they go and they use, like, basically, like, the poison with the big, you know, Made in Russia sign on it, people are going to turn around and go, well, clearly the Russians did it. So they know when they did it that it was going to come back to them. And all of their denials are just, like, part of the kabuki theater of the whole thing. But they know that we know that it was them that did it. But at the same point, like, you know, what's the UK going to do? They're not going to go declare war on Russia, right? So it's just, so everyone just sort of like, you know, stands there at high noon and holds their holsters, their gun at their hip and stares angrily at each other. And, you know, if the Russians just wanted to kill that guy, you know, sure, you could just pay some fucking non-related junkie in the UK to go stab him in an alley or something, right? You didn't need to go poison him with like specific Russian poisons, right? But they did because they know that it was going to come out that it was them, even though they're going to publicly deny it. Like the layers of that shit that go on right now, like, God, when this is all said and done,
But Adam, you're dodging the question just like the two guys did last time. Doesn't this suggest, and maybe, well, you comment on American politics all the time, so I'm going to make you comment on American politics.
Okay, yeah.
The setup being is, This clearly suggests that Rush is up to hijinks internationally and domestically. They're up to hijinks. They're up to stuff they shouldn't be doing. You know, serious stuff. You know, doesn't the fact that they're so wanton and brazen with this kind of thing suggest that American politics really should put our own issues under a powerful microscope to make sure that Russia isn't messing around? And if it puts on a deep microscope and nothing comes up, that's great. At least we know. Why are there people saying, oh, Russia, they didn't do anything. Russia's not that bad. You know, we need to worry about Canada and France, who are real bad, not Russia.
Because we got milk tariffs, man.
You know what I mean? Doesn't this highly suggest that it's worth taking a look to see if Russia has significantly influenced and affected American politics and voting and even executives in power? Is that what this says, Adam?
Of course it does. All sane, you know, that's the sane read on it. The problem is that skins are so thin on the top of your executive branch right now that any suggestion of those kind of investigations, even if they're for the good of, I'm not even going to say for the good of your country, for the good of the West, John, even if looking intently into those things was incredibly useful for all of us, They don't want to do it. He doesn't want to do it, because if he does it, it calls into question his own legitimacy. And instead of him saying, because there are all sorts of periods where he could have said, you know what, I won that election fair and square, but the Russians are still fucking around, so let's get to the bottom of that. Yeah. Which would have been the thing that, like, any other human being would have done.
Any other president would be like, take a look. Let's get it all on the table. I'm the president. The safety of the nation is more important than my privacy as the president.
Right, but I mean, that's the thing. It's like he's an insecure narcissist, right? And then this is what you got to deal with, right? It's just like any adult would have dealt with that otherwise. If it was Mitt Romney or John McCain or any of those people, and they were in that exact same situation, and everything else played out in the exact same way, they would have, you know, looked at it from the good of the country standpoint and said that, like, yeah, whatever, I'm the president, I'm not questioning that, but let's find out what the foreign nationals are trying to do to us. But, you know, you're all fucked. We're all fucked. What are we going to do? Everything's fucked.
Ricky, on a scale of 1 to 10, how scared should I be?
You personally?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, Americans.
Like of poisoning or of just, like, the world collapsing?
Of the world collapsing.
I have no idea. I haven't been following this all that closely. I don't think you and I are in any immediate danger. Okay, fine, you can think that. The other thing is, like, I don't know. I keep hearing about, you know, Chinese spies. Apparently that happened with Dianne Feinstein's driver. Apparently he was like a Chinese spy at some point. I worry about the Saudis in being invested so much in our companies over here. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to go around. I think a lot of it is probably due to just hysteria. I mean,
so you think Russia isn't a threat?
I didn't say that.
Well, I'm asking.
Yeah, but I didn't say that. That's what I'm saying. They probably are. I mean, they've been they were a threat for 100 years in a different way. But the more sunlight, the better. So let's see. This is gonna be a very long process. But I don't think you and I are in immediate danger.
Fair enough. I will say, man, this stuff, like, with the guy that got poisoned in the UK, and, like, this is, like, James Bond level stuff. Like, this is crazy. But, I mean, I guess, really,
oh, yeah.
I guess governments have always kind of done that, you know? I don't know, man.
There's,
like,
always been spying, dude, and we spy on everyone else. They spy on us. It's been a whole, even our allies spy on us, and we spy on them. It's a whole, remember, there's a story about how the Obama administration tapped Angela Merkel's phones. Like, that was a thing. It's all over the place.
Well, I'm just saying is Russia ain't to be played with, and we should stay on our toes. Adam White, man, not to drag this out, imagine being the dude whose job it is to go, like, kill somebody with poison in a different country. That's like crazy, isn't it? Like, imagine being that. Who do you think that guy is, Adam? Like, you think he's, like, a maniac? Do you think, like, he's just, like, a normal guy? Like, what's that guy's deal?
Whoa, what's that?
Huh? Wait, what do you mean?
What's this crazy noise that's all of a sudden interjected? John, we've been tapped.
Oh, God, no. All right, listen, listeners, think about that. Ricky, let's play a song. We're going to come back. We got a lot to cover still. I don't know, man. We'll get through as much of it as we can. Maybe we'll save this Ticketmaster one till next week because that's another heavy topic. We'll see. Ricky, play a song. Let's come back and we'll take some easier stuff.
Okay, so the last like month or so, I'd always known about this band and I kind of listened to them a little bit every once in a while. Then I got really into them like the last month, and the band's Bigwig. They are so good, and if you see some live footage of them, they look incredible live. I'm dying to see them play a show here. And God, I've not been able to stop listening to this record, Reclamation, which, I mean, this came out 12 years ago already. But I'm going to play the first song off the album. It's called A War Inside, from Bigwig's album Reclamation. Here it is.
For so long we slave under the gun, yet this war inside is never won. I have always sworn that I won't touch porn, and I refuse to suffer anymore.
And that was Bigwig doing Reclamation. Bigwig's been around since the 90s, right?
Yeah, for some reason, like, I knew, like, their first album, but I didn't really get in. I really started digging deep in, like, the last month with the rest of their discography. But, damn, I love the song of War Inside I just played. I think they're fantastic. So, they're one of my quote-unquote new favorites.
They haven't. Big Wig getting two thumbs up from Ricky. Let's see if Ricky gives this two thumbs up as well. The Distillers, they've released their first two new songs. And I was at like 13 years, I think it was. They released a song called Man vs. Magnet. And they released another song that was actually a remake of a Brody Dahl solo track called Blood in the Gutters. I feel as though there's been a little bit of a retroactive statement of Distillers. It was my impression in the early 2000s when the Distillers were around, people thought they were a cool band. They dig them. They were kind of firmly in the Hellcat family, and cool, maybe better than average, but not amazing. Now it seems as though the Distillers are being spun as kind of groundbreaking, you know, feminist, unique acts, almost at the level of Bikini Kill, if you will. Maybe I'm overstating this. Ricky, first crack at it. Did you dig the new song? Was it worth the 13-year wait? Are you a Distillers fan?
You know, I never was like a huge Distillers fan. I never minded them. The songs were okay, but I didn't think they were anything groundbreaking. I think it's more that, you know, old school fans are just really excited that they're back together and that there's something out there now. The songs are fine, though. I didn't mind them.
Hmm. All right, so I am a gigantic dyed-in-the-wool fan of Coral Fang, which is the last proper Distillers record that came out. It was their major lit.
Was my statement of the band accurate, you think, or inaccurate?
Well, see, I don't know, because so much of that band was, like, unfortunately tied up in the punk scene's opinion of whoever Brody was dating. Yeah, right.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm going to talk about that. That was a weird thing. But go ahead, Adam. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. When they were on Hellcat, they were very much sort of like a more aggressive female Rancid, and that was sort of the vibe that they had. But like their Hellcat stuff was, I never listened to too many of the actual full lengths that they released there, but I always sort of enjoyed their stuff when it was on a Given the Boot comp or anything like that. It was just fun and aggressive and loud and growly. But Brody sang with a drawl that was very similar to Tim's, and everyone, and she was of course, was she married to Tim? Or yeah, I think she was married to Tim, right?
For like a number of years, like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, so everyone of course was latching on to, oh, she's the female Tim. Right. Which, yeah. OK, so this person has no agency of their own. They're just female Tim. But then so her and Tim split up. They signed to a major label and they released Coral Fang, which I think is a fucking brilliant record. Like it is. There are songs on there that she just like snarls her way through. And just like I get chills from Coral Fang songs. Like I just think it's a really good record. Now, at the time, she was dating like Josh from Queens of the Stone Age, and everyone...
I think they're married now.
Maybe, and everyone, like, read into, oh, now she sounds like... It doesn't sound like fucking Queens of the Stone Age at all, right?
Thank God, just this, thank God.
This dumb narrative that I really like Songs to the Deaf. But, it was just, like, this dumb narrative that, like, got attached to them, right? But then that was sort of it, and they split up, and she had some solo stuff, and she had that Spinnerette project that she had done, and so now they're back, which is fine. Knowing that they've been gone for 14 years makes me feel really old. I had not listened to any of their new material before listening or watching this video that you had assigned me here. And, like, as big of a Coral Fang fan that I am, The song's got no hook. Like it's got like a quasi interesting time signature change between the chorus and the verse, but there's no hook. It's not a good song. So, you know, my opinion of the Distillers as a band aside, I don't know. This is kind of boring.
I agree. When you're coming back after 13 or 14 years, you got to come back with a grand slam. We're talking off number one style. Like, you really got to knock it out of the park. And I feel as though this was, like, tossed off. I feel like this was, like, a studio project that said, okay, we need to get in the studio and write a song this week. And that's what they came up with. It's like, there's no snap to it. There's no drive. I think perhaps the Distillers have been slightly overstated as to how great they are. Sing Sing Death House is real cool. Coral Fang is real cool. Do they completely blow my mind? Not so much, but they are very, very good. One thing that Adam commented on that I really do want to address is there is this very weird thing, like they'll say, you know, like if you go to, if you like read the comments like on the Facebook, they're like, she broke Tim's heart, or you know, Tim did everything, or look what Tim did for her and she left him. And it's like, it's like, why are you worried about how Tim Armstrong? He's a big boy. He can take care of himself. You know what I mean? It's like it's almost like saying like I'm jealous of his girlfriend. I wanted to be his girlfriend, not Brody. So now I'm going to attack her. you know, it's a very weird vibe, and there's something unusual going on in there. You know, it's like
I was at one point in my life like the world's biggest Rancid fan. And I have never felt that I needed to defend Tim's love life.
But they do.
What a weird, I don't know. Like people can use their time however they want, but that seems like a waste of it.
That sounds like a huge waste of it.
And that's one other thing that I think is semi-unique about punk rock. And that's because a lot of guys in punk rock, well, a common theme of punk rock is life is tough. People aren't nice to me. You know, I don't have a lot of friends. You know, and so when you get that one special girl, she's all for you, you know, and so you project that onto your favorite artist. And so when they break up, you're like, oh, I can't believe she broke Kim's heart. Meanwhile, like hip hop, like if a rapper like breaks up with a girlfriend, people are like, yeah, man, like, you know, Ice-T, he's got a billion girlfriends. Ice-T's the man. He's on to the next girl, you know, whereas in punk rock, it's like, I can't believe, you know, the power couple broke up. It's just a completely different perspective, but it's the same thing in essence, you know. I don't know, man. It's weird. So anyways, speaking of...
It has always seemed kind of gross. Just the punk rock world's like opinion on the Distillers. It's just always felt just like there's just this level of skeeziness to it that I get out of the fans that they should just.
Adam, I'm gonna throw out something, and I'm not trying to cause a controversy, and I'm not saying I believe this idea. I'm saying here's an idea that just crossed my mind. Maybe it's correct. Maybe it's incorrect. I'm gonna toss it out to you. Was the Distillers marketed by Hellcat as Brody's the wild damaged girl that you can save and will be the perfect punk rock girlfriend for you? Was she marketed as that, or did the people that we're talking about interpret her as that when really she wasn't even marketing herself as a sexual object at all?
I never got the impression that Hellcat was outright marketing them that way. I mean, I don't give Epitaph or Hellcat all that much credit at that point in their history for pushing some of these bands based just on marketing. Like, you know, there was still, the punk scene wasn't going to support it. It didn't matter how much they were going to market it. So you had all these Hellcat bands at the same time that no one gives a flying fuck about, like Mouthwash or something like that, right? Like, no one cares. Don't say that to the what are they, Norwegians? Germans? I don't know.
Necromantic. I saw Necromantic CD the other day for $2, and I was like, maybe I'll pick it up. And I did.
Pre-Hellcat, before Necromantics were on Hellcat, there was a time when I was just a young lad, and I really, 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 really liked Tiger Army. And I thought to myself, is psychobilly a thing that is now my thing? Like, I was a huge ska kid. Like, is this the new ska? Is this my thing I'm going to be into? And I did a lot of pre having the internet research into what kind of stuff was out there. And I think I heard the song Back from the Grave by Necromantics, which I can still hear in my head right now. And I was like, oh, like Necromantics, there you go. Like, this is the next thing from my journey from Tiger Army. And then it didn't go well.
That's right. Remember, I was making fun of the guy for having a kid and play haircut, and that made somebody like really angry. Because, anyways, so all right, Kim Necromantics does not have a kid and play haircut. It just looks suspiciously like the kid and play haircut, but it is not the kid and play haircut. Ricky, speaking of people that you like their haircuts, Natters, they've got a new album coming out. They're streaming the new album, and quite surprisingly to me, it was mastered by Gaze X. Ricky, take it away.
Yeah, well, I mean, so I think the story that we have here for this week is we were able to premiere the song Power Tripping from the Natter's upcoming album called Head and Threatening Attitude. That's due out on October 5th through Boss Tunage Records. And I actually played the song last episode, but in correlation with the premiere, so we were able to kind of get that done. I have listened to the whole album. It is fantastic. I'll be reviewing it and getting that in next month when the album comes out on that release day. First of all, Gaze X, they told me about this. Apparently he's done Dead Kennedys, Germs, Weirdos, and Black Flag production for like them.
As well as the fantastic solo album, maybe one of the greatest long-lost punk classics, You Goddamn Kids by Gaze X, halfway between Dead Kennedys and Devo, and it is a killer album that you should all check out.
And I gotta tell you, like, if you haven't listened to Natters yet, I mean, we've had them on I think they're on episode 350. I played them on here before. If you like Nightbirds, Dead Kennedys, and like 80s West Coast hardcore, you'll like this. This record and their previous two EPs. Did either of you listen to this? They let me choose the song that I wanted to premiere, and I thought this was one of the more powerful ones on there. This is kind of a good representation as to what the band's about, I thought.
Yeah, I checked this out.
So, Ricky, I listened...
Go ahead, Adam.
No, all right. So I listened to this pretty much immediately after I listened to that Distillers track, and I was trying to figure out about like what was really driving me crazy about the Distillers track, like outside of the no hook, and I'm like, well, it sounds tired to me. Like there's no fire in the belly, and I would expect like out of Brody to have, you know, like some pep, some anger coming out of there. And then I went and I listened to this, not thinking that I was going to get that. And I was like, whoa, this Natter's song kind of rips. This is what I would have hoped the Distillers song would have done. So kudos to you, because this is a U band in my mind. And I was like, yeah. I was like, okay, I, this is here. Like, here you go. Where one of our problems, by R I mean like music, is we'll pay a lot of attention to something we have name recognition for but isn't very good, but then we'll pay no attention to something that we don't have name recognition with but is actually better than that. And this is one of those cases. So if you listen to the Distillers song and it felt kind of listless to you, go listen to the Natterers track, because it isn't.
Yeah, honestly, my perhaps what I think punk news could improve upon right now is, you know, we're covering a lot of mid-tempo, like, I wouldn't even call it punk, I'd call it like indie punk or indie rock, stuff that's not real exciting and stuff that's not really driving a scene or making any new steps or really isn't doing things that hasn't already been done before and doesn't have any immediacy. It's like, here's stuff that we know you'll like and we're going to kind of do it and you'll enjoy it, but it's not going to, you know, blow you out of your skull. Right now we're missing a lot of really cool, you know, I would say buzz band, but kind of buzz band hardcore bands that are actually like really good. You know, we're missing Crime Watch, we're missing Youth Avoiders, we're missing all those. Dia and Moose Records or whatever that UK label that's putting out like a lot of cool stuff like that. What's that one record that like everybody loved, which actually is pretty good? It's a hardcore band. Oh man, like everyone was going crazy over it last year. I can't remember it. Anyways, Vita and Moose, that's the record label. You know, good stuff. This track is real good. This track is real immediate, and I kind of think it's like the West Coast answer to the kind of the hip and hop, the happening East Coast and UK hardcore punk scene. So, Ricky, this track is real good. It's immediate. It's fresh. It's straight. I mean, it is punk. It's clearly punk, and I dig it. I think this band is about to put out their best stuff.
Yeah, I got to. I think you got everyone should, if you're into this, definitely check out their first two EPs. Those are on Bandcamp. They're fantastic. But this record is, I think they told me the color pressing, the first 100 or so records sold out in under an hour. So they seem to be blowing up, at least in the UK. And I think,
They're from the UK. I think they're from the West Coast.
Oh, no. This is a UK band. Oh,
I just think they were the West Coast answer, but I was totally wrong.
They've been telling us, you know, they've been saying, like, yeah, that people have come up to them at shows and said that they found them actually through punk news, which is a really cool thing. This band's an up-and-comer, and I've been shouting it at the rooftops for the last, I don't know, 2 years, but I'm excited that you guys are into them, because I think this is something that a lot of our readers, our listeners, can really get behind.
That was the band I was thinking of. Exit Order.
I feel like there's a lot of stuff that is happening in the UK just seems more interesting than a lot than what's happening over here. And even the stuff that is on the more like mid-tempo, like org core-y side of things, always, I don't know, it feels more interesting under the UK right now. So you have bands like Muncie Girls or Muncie Girls,
Muncie,
is it
Muncie?
Muncie, not Munchie. Muncie Girls, and then what was their name? I saw them at Ottawa Explosion this year. I'm blanking. Hold on, this is important. Finding out what the name of this band was, because they were one of the headliners and everyone was there to see them. And it was... they had one name. Martha. Martha was incredible live. And you listen to them play and you're like, this should apply to... This should appeal to you know, every self-professed beardcore punker guy that hangs out on Punk News and talks about the Menzingers, but it feels more, I don't know, like more like artistically immediate or vital or whatever. And no one cares, or at least we don't talk about them. Punk News doesn't seem to care. I'm blaming us here. So, like, you know, there's a lot of stuff out of the UK right now that seems to be doing better.
I bought a Martha album, a 7-inch in 2014, Adam. So there.
Oh, there you go. See, ahead of the curve.
Well, speaking of people that are ahead of the curve, Pew 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 Gunshots, a band that Adam White championed, I think, before anybody else. They're big, they're famous, everybody wants a piece of them now. They're putting out a new 7-inch. The 7-inch is called Passed Out via Dynalone Records. Adam and Ricky, I know you guys are down with the Pew Pew Pew, so tell us what's new with the Pew Pew Pew.
Go ahead,
Ricky.
Oh, so, like, I was sort of passive about them. I mean, I didn't think they were bad, but they, I checked out their last album like once. I wasn't too into them, but I really like this track. I love the guitar harmonies. I think the shared vocals were interesting.
This is a band I think is going to surprise a lot of people because there's more depth than their shtick has let on. So they're, yeah, like their whole last record was like about binge drinking and pizza. And this song is still about binge drinking, don't get me wrong, but there's this element of like really sad defeatism to it. If you actually listen to it lyrically, it's not like yay, let's party with the beer. It's sort of like the beer holds back the demons in a way. And they actually they mentioned just sort of offhand in the press release that they took a bunch of the songs that for whatever they have that's coming out next, and they ran them by Craig Finn of the Hold Steady, and Craig Finn was like giving them notes on their stuff, and that to me is a big that's a big sign that clearly there's more going on here, because if you are just some like drunk punk band, Craig Finn's not going to give too much of a shit about what you're doing. He's got, you know, he has his own thing going on. Like, you don't pull in like someone of that caliber from a artistic credibility standpoint and involve them in your stuff unless I think they see that there's something there to actually latch onto. So, you know, his involvement in that, I mean, maybe they just gave him a big bag of money, but his involvement seems to, I don't know, it foreshadows, I think, a deeper shit going on with these guys.
I have a question. Weren't these guys supposed to be the next Side One Dummy Darlings?
They were a band as far as I know, they're assigned to Side One Dummy. Whenever you hear that someone is signed to Dynalone, that always means that they're signed to Dynalone in Canada. And maybe abroad, but maybe not. And even a lot of the bands that do get deals abroad will still do their stuff on Dynalone here. I think like the Dirty Nil is the one exception of it, where Dynalone pushed their stuff in the States as well. But but in some cases they didn't, right? Like Fat released the singles comp, right?
Yeah, and they did Cinnamon.
Yeah, well, Cinnamon was a Fat only thing, but the the Minimum R&B was like a Fat release, and then Dynalone in Canada. So this was sort of a weird press release because they did not mention the Side One signing at all.
Yeah,
but at the same point, like Dynalone, it was Dynalone's press release, so they have no incentive to go pump up Side One. But Side One didn't, at least as far as I've seen, they didn't go issue their own press release. So I don't know. I don't know if they are still with Side One, or if the rumored internal turmoil at Side One has claimed a victim here or what. I don't know what the story is.
I just asked because, like, I mean, you got Jeff Rosenstock going to Polyvinyl, and Dr. Vespucci going to Polyvinyl, and then suddenly these guys were supposed to be signed to Side One and put out a new record, something like that. Now they have a 7-inch coming out on Dynalone, so I just thought that was an interesting little, I don't know if it was a switch or what, but it was an interesting move.
They definitely switched on their Canadian label because they were on Royal Mountain up here, which is the label that Pup was on up here. So they flipped off of that, but yeah, I don't know if that means anything for the States or what.
Well, Pew 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 did put out a record on Side One Dummy.
Yeah, it was a reissue of their Canadian one, but. Yeah.
My guess is that they're not. I mean, I don't know, but my guess is they're not on Side One Dummy because I mean, Side One Dummy in the past years kind of just put out like archive material, like AJJ, and that's it, really. You know what I mean? Title Fight, Flogging Molly, just reissue stuff.
Gaslight Anthem.
Yeah, reissues. Yeah.
Yeah. Unknown to be continued. What else we got, John? What's going on?
Anything else we want to cover here? Let's see here. I don't know. You guys want to call? Or do you guys want to do one more story?
Do you want? I can take care of the next one if you want.
Take it away, Ricky.
So I asked to do this because this band for me I didn't even know existed until Sam Barrett posted this. But punk bands Shook Ones have announced a new album for the first time in 9 years. This will be, it's called Body Feel. It'll be out in October 19th, 2018 through Revelation Records. The band released a track called Night Blind, which will be on the new record. You can listen to it on Punk News. It's in the article. I didn't know this band existed. This is phenomenal. I love this. I pre-ordered this. They're going to be playing in LA, I think, in January. I'm going to try and see them. Why did I miss them? I don't know. This is just I really, really enjoyed this, and I checked out their last album, The Unquotable AMH, which came out in 2009. It's great.
Yeah, this is a very, very nice, loud. I mean, it's not doing anything particularly adventurous, but it's like it seems like kind of like the best example of like, you know, loud orgy punk rock that I've heard in a bit.
I can get behind that, but I don't know, this is super surprising to me, so, and it came out of left field. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I think that, like, if you are a fan of the kind of stuff that Punk News has like really traditionally been into, like, you, it behooves you to go check this out. It's quite good, people. All right, so are we rapping? Should I play a song? Get us out of here.
Yeah, rap it. You know, let's just end on a tune, baby. Reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We love getting your mail. Adam White, send us out on that sweet, sweet tunage.
Okay, so there's a band from Sudbury up here called Tommy and the Commies. I saw them play in like the front of a record store a couple of years ago, and they were super good. All their stuff is just like a completely faithful throwback to like the Buzzcocks and the Jam and the Undertones, and you know it, but vital and young sounding and just good. They are not reinventing any wheels at all here, but it's one of these sounds that is so in and of itself like complete and great that every once in a while a band comes around that like just like knocks it out of the park. Like the Briefs did it a while ago, and these guys are doing it too. So this is a band that features, it's a three piece. It features the titular Tommy, and he's backed by a pair of guys that have a fairly long kind of garage rock history, and they're brothers who he's backed by. So he's backed by Jeff and Mitch Hool. Jeff plays in a pretty crazy sounding at times basement recording project up here called Strange Attractor, that's released records on Deranged. And his brother Mitch, both played in the Ontario Power Pop Legends Statues, and Statues had a lot of stuff that was out on Germany's P-Trash Records back in the day. So he's got some muscle behind him here as far as credibility in the garage rock scene. And speaking of garage rock credibility, this record is coming out on Slovenly Recordings. John, you know what do you know about Slovenly? Slovenly, I don't know what you call it.
Slovenly, they put out some Spit stuff. Slovenly,
yeah,
Slovenly.
they were like the early champions of the Spits. Like in my head, the Spits are a Slovenly band before anyone else.
When are we gonna get some Spit stuff? That's the real question.
Yeah, well, hopefully soon. I mean, Slovenly's also put out stuff by Duchess Says.
OCs. Oh, Duchess Says, OCs.
Yeah, Personal and the Pizzas.
Great band. Personal and the Pizzas, I've talked about them on the podcast before. Personal Pizzas is freaking rule.
Yeah, so anyways, Slovenly's like, it's a Reno, Nevada-based garage rock label, and just like everything they put out is cool. Like, they don't put out something if it isn't just got this vibe. And anyways, Tommy and the Commies has that. So this song is called Suckin' in Your 20s, and it's by Tommy and the Commies, off a record they have coming out on September 28th on Slovenly. So here you go. Goodbye.